Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you as usual. And, Jim, we start with the good, which came from the House of Representatives on Tuesday. We knew this was coming, and that's the bill sponsored by Arizona Republican Congressman Trent Franks that bans abortion after 20 weeks. It's basically due to the fact that it is well researched now scientifically that the unborn can feel pain at that point, and that is why the 20-week marker was put in there. Obviously, the horrific trial involving the murders of babies and the conviction of Kermit Gosnell is an impetus for this. Largely along party lines, 228 votes in favor of it. It's not going to probably even see the light of day in the Senate, and even if it did, the president would veto it. But the point here is that this story is not going away. The House Republicans did a good job of that, and they have the American people on their side on this. The American people have consistently hated late-term abortion, and for the Democrats to toe such a rigid line here can only help.
I think Gosnell helps illuminate the lack of conviction behind what had been the Democrats' messaging on abortion all through the Clinton years, which was they wanted it to be safe, legal, and rare. Now, they did plenty to make it, you know, legal or to keep it legal, and they very much believed that efforts to restrict any part of it, even partial birth abortion, even parental notification, any of these, you know, what people would see as minor restrictions or limits, basically was kind of dismissed as, oh, terrible, slippery slope, you're going to ban abortion, we'll go back to the days of back alley abortions and all that stuff. But folks in the pro-life community, or those who are morally troubled by abortion, could say, well, what are you doing to make it rare? It's good that you recognize that this should be something to be rare. The idea that this is something rare suggests that it's not something that's good, and it's not necessarily something that's harmless, and it's not something we in society want to see more of, but what are you willing to do to try to help make it rare? And unsurprisingly, Democrats were not willing to do very much, other than perhaps like put condoms on the lunch counters in schools. And I think it was the Surgeon General under Clinton, who the same one who wanted to teach masturbation in schools, also wanted to put out condoms on lunch trays. So we have the circumstance in which Democrats, you know, want it to be legal. They don't really care about whether it's rare. And now we have a really fair question to ask. How about, do you want it to be safe? Because, you know, Kermit Gosnell's House of Horrors was the embodiment of everything that was unsafe about this. This is supposed to be the horror nightmare of what a world in which abortion is banned is supposed to be. This, you know, horrific, filthy conditions and stuff. And we're not seeing any real push towards a more centralized system of investigating abortion clinics, treating them like hospitals, regulating them, inspecting them, making sure they're up to code. And so what does that say about the what you could call the abortion regime in this country? That they're so determined to keep it legal and okay in as many situations as possible that they don't even want abortion clinics shut down for not being up to health codes. And I think this kind of shows the moral black hole that is at the heart of the Democratic perspective on this, that they don't really want it to be rare. And deep down, they're willing to even give some ground on whether or not it's safe so long as it's legal. For a party that keeps talking about how much they care about women and women's rights were not being protected in Kermit Gosnell's House of Horrors. So kudos to the House GOP for continuing to try to put the spotlight on this issue. I do feel like you're seeing the ground shift beneath our feet on the abortion issue. And I think, you know, we're seeing the Democrats are as shameless and transparent as they've ever been.
No, that's certainly true. And I believe, you could correct me on this if I'm wrong, I think they took rare out of the platform in 2012. So they've even stopped trying to pretend that they want it to be rare. So as we mentioned, Democrats control the Senate and the White House, so don't expect it to happen. But as Jim mentioned, the social ground moving could be even more significant than whether this passes in this Congress. On to martini number two now. And Jim, the president was at the G8 summit in Ireland. Now he is in Berlin, just wrapped up a speech there at the Brandenburg Gate. Talked about a lot of different things. Talked a lot about the Kennedy speech there back in 1963. But the thing that will get the most attention is his new policy on the nuclear arsenal. A couple different clips here, one of which he trotted out the line that got him so much grief back in 2008. And then he talked about how it's just so wrong that our nuclear arsenal still exists. Here we go.
For we are not only citizens of America or Germany, we are also citizens of the world. And our fates and fortunes are linked like never before. We may no longer live in fear of global annihilation, But so long as nuclear weapons exist, we are not truly safe. But we have more work to do. So today I'm announcing additional steps forward. After a comprehensive review, I've determined that we can ensure the security of America and our allies and maintain a strong and credible strategic deterrent while reducing our deployed strategic nuclear weapons by up to one-third. And I intend to seek negotiated cuts with Russia to move beyond Cold War nuclear postures.
And before that second clip, the president talked about how he reduced our nuclear arsenal to the lowest level since the 50s, thanks to the START II treaty, which also included a mandate to modernize our nuclear arsenal, which I'm pretty sure hasn't happened yet here, Jim. So I guess that's not important, but reducing it is, and hoping others play along is also a big part of this.
So much to go through in that speech, and I'll just go a quick, just two or three points to just kind of jump out at me. The first is, when he says we are citizens of the world, I'm just going to say no, and there's a lot of bad words that I'd like to say, and I'll just spare. Because like, if you're a citizen of the world, why do you need passports? If you're a citizen of the world, who will protect your rights? Where is this constitution of the world that he speaks of? This is a very lovely phrase that means absolutely nothing, okay? There is no world government despite the ambitions of the United Nations. And there isn't necessarily something that connects me other than, you know, basic human compassion, which, you know, some may see as being theologically based or something like that. But ultimately, Mr. President, you're head of a government. You were elected by the people of the United States, okay? Your job is to protect the people of the United States and to represent the interests of the United States. Doing nice things for other country is a bonus. And you arguably you could say this is a moral obligation that we have. Mr. President, you're not a citizen of the world. And after all the questions he's had about where he was born, you kind of wonder why he'd want to bring up the issue of citizenship again. So this is this meaningless mashed potato phrase that feels good. Oh, citizens of the world, kumbaya. No, there is no such thing as world citizenship. But then the next thing is, I'm not adamantly opposed to reducing the size of our nuclear arsenal. I got to admit, I'm not terribly worried about us misusing our nuclear arsenal. I think it's pretty obvious that the U.S. will never use it in a first strike ever again. It's really hard to imagine a scenario in which we would actually use a second strike. I think we'd have to have one of our own cities get nuked before we would drop a nuke on somebody else. And the other thing is that in the grand scheme of dangers of the world, I'm not that worried about Russia's nuclear arsenal. There was good reason to be worried for a long time, and we did our efforts to help the Russians secure their nuclear material. Still something we have to keep an eye on, but if you had, give me a magic wand that could do 10 things on the world stage, I'm not sure that reducing the Russian nuclear arsenal by one-third would be among my top 10 choices. So this really seems like kind of a strange priority for the administration. That, you know, in a world with the Taliban, Iran's nuclear power, Syria falling apart, and the possibility of a giant Shia versus Sunni Middle East war that envelops all of Syria's neighbors, the tensions between China and Japan, the upheaval in Turkey, and, you know, so I mean, there's a picture on the front page of the New York Times today of a protester getting sprayed with pepper spray by a cop. And I was like, oh, it's Turkey. And I looked at it, and it turns out, no, actually, it's Brazil. They're having a big uprising against their people. I mean, there's a lot of chaos in this world. And the irony is that for the first time in generations, Russia's nuclear arsenal has nothing to do with the chaos in the world. And this is probably, you know, one of the moments that Russia's nuclear arsenal is actually not terribly threatening to Americans right now. Now, if Russia offered to do that, I might be willing to deal with that. But I just don't understand why this is a priority. And Obama chose to do this at Brandenburg Gate, which we all remember is where President Reagan said, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. So Obama really seems to think that reducing the U.S. and Russian nuclear arsenals by one-third is the moral equivalent of ending the division of Germany and ending the Cold War. And I just can't get my head around that. It is an obsession with arms control. When in fact we're, you know, in a multilateral world and non-state actor, that's what the real danger is. You know, bioweapons and chemical weapons and you know, terror groups and groups that have these kind of vague militant wing and political wings. Like, that's where the chaos is in this world. Obama continues to focus on this really kind of, you know, bizarre side issue that I guess makes his liberal fans very happy at the expense of much bigger problems. And it just is a sign of an administration whose foreign policy vision is just completely adrift.
On to another issue of the president's, and that's in our crazy martini, and that's his gun control push. There are those in various states who, of course, are pushing for this as well. There are groups in New Hampshire, and one group in particular decided to read the names of those lost to gun violence, a very poignant and potentially powerful way to show their argument for this cause. But one of the names that was read off, Tamerlan Tsarnaev, who, of course, is the now deceased of the two Boston Marathon bombers. So, Jim, I'm not sure he's the one you want to invoke in order to move public opinion.
I had this sent to me by a, you know, somebody I email with regularly, and he said, "Jim, this is white hot." And, you know, you hear the, you know, this, okay, you hear, oh, this is a big deal. And then you read the story, and it doesn't seem like that big a deal. And then I read that gun control rally, they're saying that Tamerlan Tsarnaev, one of the Boston Marathon bombing suspects, is a victim of gun violence. Okay, that is white hot. That got me white hot, ready to swear a blue streak. Now, here's the thing. We should also recognize it's not like the official organizers of this event are attempting to make the argument that, you know, Big Brother Bomber is a victim of gun violence. It's some person who was coming up and is part of the folks reading names of victims of gun violence. It's not – this is an official stance of the organization. Having said that, I think it's safe to say this is probably the world's single dumbest gun control supporter. Because here's the thing. Even if you claim him as a victim of gun violence, but once you blow up the Boston Marathon, I think most people no longer have terrible sympathy for you, and they're rooting for gun violence. They'd really like to see you get shot, and they'd like to shoot you themselves. But then the next thing is that this guy was actually run over by his brother with an SUV. So, I mean, yes, the gunshots didn't help his condition. One of the reasons it probably made him unable to dodge the oncoming SUV, and he got dragged by it and all that stuff. The death certificate says that, you know, it was a combination of blunt trauma and gunshots. But it's not even like you could say gun violence was definitively what killed this guy. An astonishingly dumb gun control supporter, and I think it shows where your thinking takes you. Once you see the world through a particular political lens, you're incapable of recognizing any other different set of circumstances. And, you know, the idea of equating the Boston Marathon bomber with the victims of that kindergarten class up in Connecticut is just asinine. I'm a little disappointed. The article doesn't go into a great detail. They said there were some loud shouts and stuff from protesters. I'm wondering if how many of the gun control supporters at that rally objected to that and wanted to say to this guy, "You jackass, you are totally destroying the cause we believe in. You are making this utter," you know, maybe he was a sleeper guy. Maybe this was actually a gun rights supporter who wanted to discredit the movement, because it is so, it's almost frightening somebody could walk around with such an astonishingly myopic worldview that they cite this guy as a victim of violence that we should all feel very sad and sorry about.
That's what makes the crazy martini. So, Jim?
That's right in there with the word crazy. That's why we do it.
So. Yeah, absolutely. All right. As we try to wrap our minds around that little gem, we'll reconvene tomorrow. Jim, have a great day.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.